And a very good morning to you, Sunday, March 31st, 2019. Hope you've had a good weekend. It's a beautiful morning, beautiful spring morning here in South Manchester. It's glorious outside. Seems like we've been up since forever. The clocks went forward, of course, by an hour. We're on British summertime right now. It is Sunday View, of course. I'm going to glance through the front pages of the Sunday newspapers and one or two of the stories inside. And I've been listening to and watching the early political television and radio shows as well. Some interesting things cropping up there as well. Look forward to you tweeting me, Sunday View it is.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Yeah, so it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, but you know that already. Do stay in touch with me. Love to hear your comments and your thoughts as always. Beautiful day. Thanks for waking up with the Richie Allen Show.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
So a little bit later on, Ken Livingstone has waded into the anti-Semitism row again. This will never go away, this. Of course not. I'll talk about that a bit later on as well. There's a bit of snowflakery going on in universities in France. Students getting plays, ancient Greek plays, shut down because of a bit of blackfacing. Might talk about that later on as well. And Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, has said the government needs to come in and regulate us because we can't do it by ourselves. Implications for free speech, Facebook as well, on the programme. But of course, going to kick off with, not with Brexit, going to kick off with something which got my attention yesterday. It's funny, it sent one or two of my listeners into abject meltdown. They saw it as a bit of a tyranny. I don't see it as a bit of a tyranny. I see it as something lovely. Something dreamed up by a septuagenarian. Did you know what a septuagenarian is? Did you? Clever clogs. I had to look it up. A septuagenarian is someone in their 70s. A man called Humphrey, who owns a chain of pubs. And Humphrey said that he's sick to the false teeth. Eh? Not to the back teeth. He's sick to the false teeth, you ageist bastard, Richie. Of people using mobile phones in his pubs. And I love this. I really do. Humphrey runs Samuel Smith's. Now, what I love about Samuel Smith's is they sell a lovely pint of lager in Manchester, and it is the cheapest pint of lager in the world, I reckon. Even cheaper than Costa Rica and Vietnam and Turkmenistan and anywhere else you can think of. And it's glorious. Beautiful. A pint for under £2. Lovely. Right? He's fed up with people using mobile phones, and he's told his staff, I'll fire you if you don't enforce this rule. So he wants digital devices and phones basically banned from his premises. I love it. I properly love this. And my mate Tez, who's a bit of a campaigner on this in Salford, old Tez. Tez carries around one of these mobile phone jammers. He shouldn't do. Or he should do. It's up to him, really. And sometimes, once in a blue moon, we'll take them out just to annoy some people nearby who might be texting and messing around on Facebook when they should be talking to one another. Now, in Tez's defence, he does this for a couple of seconds once in a blue moon just to get a few laughs. But I'm with him. When you're in a pub and you're with friends and somebody takes a phone out to check Facebook or social media, you kind of want to bend their fingers back to such an acute angle that they'll never be able to do it again. But that's wrong as well, of course. Humphrey Smith, 73-year-old man, said pub goers will have to leave my premises to take a call. He's basically saying that phones are killing conversations and are destroying the social experience of being with people, being in the room with them, as opposed to being on Facebook. But some of you on Twitter yesterday made me laugh, saying, oh, you can't do anything anymore. You can't go anywhere. You can't smoke anymore. Now you can't use your phones. Those are different issues entirely. Saying you can't use your phone is a wonderful thing. I believe so anyway. He's also gotten rid of jukeboxes, slot machines. I love Humphrey Smith. Slot machines as well, those rotten things. Designed to steal money from people who don't have any money. Get them out of pubs. And he's taken televisions out as well. Good man! The television thing is interesting because, as I've written about extensively, TVs in Wetherspoons and other chains are just left on, turned down and tuned to BBC 24 or Sky News. Programming. It's not good. So Humphrey Smith, good man. I'll be popping into one of your establishments in the near future for a couple of pints and I'll be more than happy to turn my phone off. I have never in my life, in company, I swear, taken out my phone and looked at it while I've been in company. Never. It's as rude as bejesus to do that, so I wouldn't do it. Shall we look at the front pages of the papers? We're in spring, isn't it great, eh? Looking out the window there, South Manchester, bathed in sunshine. 'Tis terrific. Sunday Telegraph. Snap election under May would annihilate Tories. Self-explanatory. Senior Tories are allegedly telling Theresa May, don't hold a snap election because we'll get hammered. A series of ministers and MPs have told The Telegraph the party would be annihilated if May insisted on fighting a campaign to face down Parliament over Brexit in the coming months. May has, of course, said that once this initial stage of trying to do a deal with the European Union has been completed, that she's going to sling her hook anyway and leave. So what's going on here? I don't know. That's the front page of the Sunday Telegraph, which writes, MPs refusing to budge means that May faces a growing likelihood that Parliament will legislate this week to force her into seeking a soft Brexit if backbenchers can agree on a specific plan. There's going to be another round of indicative votes tomorrow in Parliament. There were indicative votes held last week. Of course, this was the brainchild of Oliver Letwin MP. But last week, the indicative votes didn't give any indication of what members of Parliament would in fact support. So the idea that tomorrow they will find a way forward is, well, it's unlikely. We'll see tomorrow. I'll be watching it with great interest, of course. Sunday Telegraph. Sunday Times. It's all the same today. Sunday Times front page, cabinet close to collapse. In the Times, it's reported that May will face resignations if she calls for a snap election. Same story, different sources. If she calls an election, there will be resignations, according to the Times, which interestingly says that the Queen could be asked to intervene by Theresa May in order to prevent a so-called soft Brexit. The Queen, of course, you've got to get permission from the Queen to dissolve Parliament. Got to get permission from the Queen, it's Her Majesty's government, permission to have an election. The Queen isn't just the quaint old, smelly old figurehead there for the tourists. I've told you this before. Before you're allowed to enter Parliament, an MP, in order to carry out his or her duties as an MP in Parliament, must swear allegiance to the Queen and all her heirs. It's very serious stuff. I've gotten into this before in the past. We'll hear from Ella Whelan here. She was on Sky News newspaper review this morning. Ella Whelan writes for Spiked Online, and the Queen might come up in this. This is what's going on anyway. This is Ella Whelan about these stories this morning.
There's been a letter signed that says that if May goes for any kind of a soft Brexit option, that cabinet ministers will revolt. There is also six other cabinet ministers who are the kind of Remainiacs, as they've been dubbed, who are threatening her from the other side. There's also, outside of the Tory party, there's this threat now that Parliament could take control and institute what they call a compromise and a kind of a soft Brexit. And the interesting thing about the coverage in the Times is that it reports that Theresa May could go to the Queen to get her to block a soft Brexit deal.
And that is possible, by the way. There is a roadmap. Shouldn't say roadmap, but legislatively, that could very well be achieved, getting the Queen to intervene. And what's fascinating about that is, I've not had time to go on Radio 4 and pull out bits of audio, but a lot of constitutional experts are saying this morning that this is well within the boundaries of the monarch. Isn't that amazing? And people grow up in oblivion in this country, thinking that Parliament is sovereign and that the monarch is just, as I said earlier, a figurehead and, you know, a kind of a throwback to the old days and good for the economy and tourism. No, these people never went away. And if you listen to programmes that I've done with Dean Henderson in particular and others, we've talked about how it was the monarchs of Europe and the financial elites that invented democracy, basically to make us all believe that we have, within our own means, we have the ability every few years to change course and to be the masters of our own destinies. That's why democracy was invented. It was invented by monarchs and the financial families of Europe, and it was the monarchs and these financial families that intermarried. When Ike talks about bloodlines and stuff, this is what he means. It's very important, this. They never went away, these rulers. They're still here in our midst. And yes, May could very well go. I don't think it's feasible that May will go to the Queen, but it's constitutionally possible. It really is. Some of the papers saying that there's a 5-point lead in the polls for Jeremy Corbyn this morning. No doubt that his... Let's hear what else Ella Whelan says about the Queen before we move on.
Which I think is just... I'm a hardcore Brexiteer, but the idea that you would ask the Queen to get involved in a democratic process in order to block it, even though I don't want us, I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
I'm not sure the Queen could do much worse.
Perhaps.
I'm sure the Queen could do worse if you left it open to the Queen. But there you have Ella Whelan, who's a committed Brexiteer, and I like her. I think she's a pretty sound voice there for leaving the European Union, but she doesn't have a clue about the country she lives in and who it is in fact ruled by. Very interesting stuff. The Mail on Sunday, number 10, at war over suicidal election. Like I said, it's all the same across the big, the heavyweight newspapers today. It's in the Sunday Mail, by the way, the Mail on Sunday, where it is claimed that polls that have been conducted over the weekend show that Jeremy Corbyn has a 5-point lead, the Labour Party leading in the polls right now. Now, his shadow foreign secretary is a woman called Emily Thornberry, and she was on Ridge on Sunday this morning on Sky News. This is very funny stuff, this. It's almost vaudeville. It's crazy stuff, this. Thornberry wants to leave the European Union, but not go very far. Have a listen to this, Emily Thornberry.
It's really hard. I mean, Jeremy is trying to bring people together, and we are trying to see what Parliament can agree on. I mean, the difficulty is that it is also last minute. And the reason for that is because we have been trying to tell the Prime Minister for a couple of years now the sort of things that people could agree about, but she just doesn't listen.
I mean, you need other more MPs to compromise, don't you? You're talking about trying to find a solution, a cross-party solution. I mean, you voted or abstained on quite a few different options. Do you think some of your colleagues need to do the same?
I think that people do need to compromise. Of course they do. We do think that what we have been suggesting is an entirely thought out, you know, we've been talking to Europe about it, we've talked to experts about it. What we've said is that we want to be in a customs union, we want to be close to a single market, we need to have dynamic alliance of rules and regulations so that, you know, we can be outside the European Union, but not very far, because we think that the 52-48 actually spoke a central truth, which is that, yes, you know, we do need to leave the European Union. There was a referendum, but we mustn't ignore the 48%, and we need to therefore leave but not go far.
Yeah. Did you ever run away from home when you were 5 years old and you got to the end of the street, to the corner, and then you realised that, well, this is not such a great idea. Maybe I'll just hang around here for a bit and pretend that I've gone, but I won't go very far. It's farcical stuff, this, isn't it? You know, we want alignment on this and on that. We want to be a member of a customs union. We want access to the single market. We want to leave, but we don't want to go very far. No, you don't want to leave, you sad old saddo. That's what it is. It's all absolutely ridiculous to me. It's farcical at this stage. pretend to leave. That's the thing. Stay in the customs union, pretend to leave, and don't end the freedoms. Freedom of movement, which catastrophic for this country in so many ways. Anyway, stay in the customs union. I think she rubber stamps that, Emily Thornberry.
I did Prime Minister's questions, I think, 2.5 years ago, and I made it clear in the House of Commons then that on our side of the House, we think that we should be in the customs union. No ifs, no buts. Be in a customs union.
I understand that you're saying that, you know, you don't know the shape of the future relationship.
Yeah.
But that's the EU's fault, isn't it? Because they laid out right at the beginning that you need to sort out the divorce before the future relationship can be sorted. So the divorce is the withdrawal agreement. And
no.
I'm still struggling to find
out. No, if you're looking for fault. The fault is this, right? Is that we have a referendum. People say they want to leave. There has to be another injection of democracy after that. We can't just say we're going to leave and then hand it over to Theresa May and let her do whatever she wants with our country.
We need another injection of democracy. We'll keep injecting democracy until we get what we want, which is not to leave. Now I'm going to read some tweets, because I got my wrist roundly slapped over the weekend by more than one listener who said, Richie, last couple of days, Thursday, Wednesday, you didn't read out so many tweets. That's true. It's so heavily packed with content, the programme. I barely get to the end of it, but I'm going to read a few tweets. Good morning to Patrick, who says compromise is vastly overrated regarding Emily Thornberry there. Ricky tweets, what a load of hogwash from the MPs on the programme this morning. Good morning to Cliff Moore, friend and supporter of the programme. How you doing, Cliff? Top of the morning, Richie. He says, I'm not going to read what he says then because it's very complimentary. Thank you, Cliff. I appreciate that. Good morning to Gail. We should protest to get our back, says Gail. That's interesting because what's his face? Peter Hitchens has written in the Mail on Sunday today about what he sees as the farce of moving the clocks twice a year. I didn't get to read it, Gail, but it's on the Daily Mail online. It is free. So get on there and have a read of it. David tweets, Richie, I think it's the various royal families behind the EU power grab. When it all comes down to it, David, yes, mate, it's the royal families historically and the financial families, the financial elites of Europe. We know who they are. We've named them many times on this programme. Good morning to Susan. Happy Mother's Day, she says. Although stealing an hour from us is a bit mean, yeah. It's supposed to be the day that mum gets a lie-in, right? And everybody else does things. Is that what happens today? People make dinner and do all that stuff, all that... Because it's supposed to be sexist even suggesting that, isn't it? But it generally is mum that makes the dinner, right? So today, if you're a mother and you're listening to this, let me know. Do you get to do absolutely sod all today? Sit back, feet up while everybody rushes around. Is that how it goes? Good morning to Hubertes, who's talking here about stop and search, which is in the news today. Because as far as I've read this morning, the Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, has repealed legislation, or has basically, with a stroke of a pen, written off legislation brought in by Theresa May, when May was Home Secretary, which made it more difficult for officers to just stop and search anybody they bloody well felt like, right? That was done away with under May to prevent discrimination. But Sajid Javid has reintroduced much stronger powers for police officers to stop and search. This is all about knife crime, of course. Thank you, Hubertes, there. Loads of tweets, of course, which is lovely. Hi to Liz Jones. Good morning, Liz. How you doing? Good morning to Coca Bell. Musician, singer, songwriter, how are you? Good stuff. Coca Bell was convinced that we were going to leave the European Union over the weekend, but we're not going anywhere, in my opinion, anyway. Right, good morning to Dave Simpson. Good morning, Dave. Richie, why does the media keep digging up even failed past politicians and asking their opinions, as if they will save us? For example, war criminals, sellouts to banks and corporations, and those who sold off or destroyed our industries. People, wise up, says Dave Simpson. Dave, I couldn't have put it better myself. Good morning to John Connor as well. Is that the real John Connor? He's come back from 2029. Good man. Good morning to William Henderson. Good morning, William. Cooking the missus's breakfast right now, says William. Good man. Good man. That's right. Caroline is not yet a mother, so I'm not doing anything for Caroline today. She's currently cooking the Sunday lunch while I'm working here. At least I'm working, I suppose. The Justice Secretary is David Gawke. That's G-A-U-K-E. Unusual surname. David Gawke. He's the Justice Secretary. He was on the Andrew Marr show. Is Theresa May's withdrawal deal dead? Is it, David? Even if it gets brought back for a fourth time this week, God save us from it. Is it dead? David Gawke, the Justice Secretary.
Well, I'm not sure that one can say that, for the very simple reason is that the country needs to find a way forward which reflects the referendum result, does so in a way that protects our jobs and security and the integrity of the United Kingdom and our national security. And I think, you know, in the end, you always, I think, keep coming back to this point that the Prime Minister's deal does do that. Now, we have to recognise that it's been defeated in the House
of
Commons.
Three times, it's been slaughtered, not just defeated.
It has been defeated three times, but Parliament has not as yet found a way forward. And Parliament needs to find a way forward that, in my view, ensures that we leave the European Union in an orderly manner. And it's not yet done so. And, you know, one of the options that still remains there is the Prime Minister's deal, because so I have to say, I think it is the best way of meeting that objective.
It's reported that it's going to be brought back on Wednesday, possibly in the form of legislation. Is that true?
Well, I think the Prime Minister is reflecting on what the options are and is considering what may happen, but I don't think any decisions have been made as yet.
Well, one thing that may happen, and one decision that may happen, is tomorrow MPs may gather around an alternative. And there seems to be a head of wind at the moment between the father of the House, Ken Clark's idea of what's been called Common Market 2.0, some form of customs union-based arrangement with the EU. Now, if that passes in the House of Commons, is the government going to honour that result?
Well, I think we're clearly going to have to consider very carefully the will of Parliament, because in this process, I mean, my view is that the best outcome is the Prime Minister's deal. But if that is not the favoured outcome of Parliament, then we would need to consider what Parliament does want to do. At the moment, all we've seen is what Parliament doesn't want to do.
So
but if Parliament moves in that direction, clearly we're going to have to consider. I'm not going to make a commitment here and now, but we would have to consider very closely what Prime Minister, what Parliament decides to do.
Interesting stuff. Now, Gawke is then asked in a roundabout way by Andrew Marr, what is more important, the will of the electorate, those who were asked to vote 2.5 years ago, or parliamentarians charged with implementing that decision? In a roundabout way, he doesn't get an answer, but at least he asks it.
Parliament decides to do.
Because as we were saying in the paper review, there is a genuine constitutional argument. Is it more important that MPs stood on manifestos in the general election saying they were going to honour the result of the referendum? Or is it more important that we actually take seriously the sovereignty of Parliament and the judgment and conscience of MPs now? Which of those two things is more important to you?
The question basically is, the manifesto pledges to honour the result, which was clear, 52%, 48%. In favour of leaving on June 23rd, was it, 2016. Is that more important, or the consciences of MPs? You'd love to get an answer from this, from Gawke on this, wouldn't you? But you don't.
Well, look, I think the first thing to say is that we have to be straight with people that there are no ideal choices available and that there are very good arguments against any possible outcome at the moment.
But blah, blah, blah. My great friend and colleague, Jean-Anne Crowley, who's listening to this programme on the West of Ireland, in Cleggan, in the Republic of Ireland, in Ireland. Jean-Anne says, didn't we vote twice on Lisbon, wasn't it? And she's absolutely right. Back in 2008, the Irish people rejected ratifying the Lisbon Treaty. Why did they do that in 2008? Well, because the Irish are not stupid. And they saw that Lisbon basically created an unelected president of the European Union. It paved the way for a European Union Navy. It paved the way for European Union embassies or representations in countries around the world. We saw that it was disastrous, so we voted against it. And within 10 months of saying no, we were told to go back and vote again. When I say we, I was living in Spain at the time. I left Ireland in late 2003. I've not been home in that time either, 16 years nearly. And that's what happened. That's the tyranny. The French rejected it. The Danes rejected it. And were told, sorry, we just can't accept your failure to ratify the Lisbon Treaty, so you'll have to go back again. Lisbon Lisbon came years after Maastricht, and each of these treaties, Nice, of course, came between Maastricht and Lisbon. All of those treaties, when you look at them, they're thousands of pages long, but when you synopsize them down, they're all about handing more and more control of a sovereign nation's right to govern itself to the European Union, effectively. That's what they're doing. Right? And we said no to it, the Irish. We were told, well, sorry, go back and vote again. It's exactly 25 minutes past the hour. We are going to leave Brexit in a moment, by the way. Don't worry about it. But Tom Watson, the deputy leader of the Labour Party, was on the Andrew Marr show too. And he was asked by Marr about Labour's future election manifesto. So if there is a snap election called, would the Labour Party have in its manifesto a commitment to a second referendum? But he first of all asked them about a second referendum. And Watson says here clearly that a second referendum is not a solution. It's the only way out at this stage. Tom Watson.
I think that's the only way we can bring the country back together now. And both Keir Starmer and Jeremy Corbyn have said that this week. You know, our members are looking for a huge change in our political economy. There are so many millions of losers after a decade of austerity. We need to move beyond Brexit, and it seems to me the only way we can do that now is with a people's vote. That a people's vote is the solution, not an option. It's the way we can move the country on.
And when he was asked subsequently by Marr, would Labour have it in its manifesto that there would be a second referendum, Watson said that, well, it's a collaborative process, we ask all the members, but I would certainly be advocating that our manifesto state clearly that we would hold a second referendum. That is, if there is a snap election soon. This is all over the papers, The Observer, The Express, front page headlines all about the problems faced by Theresa May and the possibility of a second referendum and the possibility of a snap election and all these indicative votes, so it's crazy. There were pro-leave protests, of course, around the country over the weekend, very large marches in London. And leavers were annoyed with Channel 4's coverage of the marches. John Snow, the presenter of Channel 4 News, has apologised. According to the Sunday Observer, Channel 4 News has apologised after John Snow said he had never seen so many white people in one place, referring to these pro-Brexit protesters who were in London on Friday. The 71-year-old presenter was broadcasting live from outside the Houses of Parliament when he made the unscripted remarks while wrapping up the programme. He said, "It's been a most extraordinary day. A day which has seen, I have never seen so many white people in one place. It's an extraordinary story. There are people everywhere. There are crowds everywhere." These remarks drew criticism online for some viewers who described Snow's comments as unnecessary. Some people thought that Snow was alluding to, well, that he was kind of in a underhanded way claiming that you had an almost exclusively white pro-Brexit march. And Snow was kind of alluding to maybe the idea that many of those who were marching were maybe anti-immigrant or anti-migrant. It's a bit cheap by Snow. There have been complaints made to Ofcom. We'll see. Speaking of complaints made to Ofcom, if you heard this programme on Thursday, there was, for my money anyway, one of the most extraordinary things, and I mean it, I'm not exaggerating, that I've ever heard while listening to commercial or national television or radio. BBC Radio 5's Nicky Campbell was interviewing Jim Wells of the Democratic Unionist Party on Thursday morning. And the DUP have refused to back Theresa May's withdrawal deal over the backstop issue, right? But mostly, even though the vast majority of people in Northern Ireland voted to remain in the European Union, the Democratic Unionist Party seems to be in favour of a harder Brexit at this stage. So Nicky Campbell interviewed Jim Wells of the DUP, and talking about bias in the media, this was an interview that was supposed to be about Brexit and Theresa May's deal. Nicky Campbell's introduction to Jim Wells was outrageous and indicative, a beautiful example of the conduct of the media around this debate. Listen to this from Thursday morning.
Former Minister in Stormont, good morning to you. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you all right. How are you this morning?
Not too bad.
Right, do you know what some people are frustrated about? And this is as they say it. And forgive me for my candour. In your party, there's a bunch of people who think that the planet is less than 10,000 years old. There's a bunch of us. They see it. I mean, you yourself have objected to same-sex marriage. It's, you know, it's absolutely not in line with modern Britain, and yet you are holding modern Britain to ransom.
Yeah, it's incredible that it bears repeating.
Right, do you know what some people are frustrated about? And this is as they say it. And forgive me for my candour. In your party, there's a bunch of people who think that the planet is less than 10,000 years old. There's a bunch of us. They see it. I mean, you yourself have objected to same-sex marriage. It's, you know, it's absolutely not in line with modern Britain, and yet you are holding modern Britain to ransom.
Now, I've complained to Ofcom. I thought, for the crack, why not? On Friday afternoon, I complained officially to Ofcom, went through the channels, sent the audio over and said that this is intolerable. You know, and it should be intolerable for anybody in the country who pays their licence fee annually to listen to Nicky Campbell, bring a man on from Northern Ireland to talk about Brexit and to introduce him as some sort of Neanderthal who thinks the Earth is 10,000 years old and who opposes same-sex marriage and all the rest of it. It's disgraceful. And I can tell you, and I did say this on Friday, excuse me, on Thursday in Thursday's programme, I would expect, in my career in commercial radio, I would have been suspended, if not fired, for doing that. Jim Wells' response was brilliant. I won't play the response. He was absolutely brilliant. I've complained to Ofcom. I would guess others have probably done the same too. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Finally on Brexit, and we're going to leave it then, because I know it's killing everybody. I know it's a Sunday, Mothering Sunday and all of that. The Labour MP, Lisa Nandy from Wigan, was on Sky this morning with Sophie Ridge. And Ridge asked her, basically, as this is collapsing now, we're not going to leave. It's obvious to anybody, even the most desperate of people in this country, desperate to see the country break and sever its ties with the European Union. It's obvious to them now that we're not leaving. So Nandy was asked by the Sky presenter Sophie Ridge, Isn't democracy dead now? Is democracy dead? This was Nandy's response.
Well, to be honest, I think it's been a long time coming in towns like mine. I think before we had the vote to leave the EU, we had a very sudden and dramatic rise in support for UKIP, including amongst many people who would never have dreamed of voting for openly racist or far-right parties. And before that, we had years of falling turnout that we thought was apathy, but actually was a level of frustration, even anger with the political system that people didn't feel really spoke for them or understood their interests. And so I think this has been a long time coming, and Brexit really was the sort of final chance to get us to wake up and listen. My worry about the way that the debate has gone in Parliament and in politics over the last few years, especially the last few months, is that with attitudes hardening in Parliament as well as public, a number of my constituents now feel that not only are they being told that they voted the wrong way last time, but they're also being told that they are essentially too stupid to have a say in the future of the country. And, you know, the view from here couldn't be more different. There are people who voted Remain and Leave, having thought very hard about it, because they had feelings about the European Union and about the way that politics works that just simply aren't being addressed, and we're still not addressing them. And I think we are facing a very real breach of trust between politicians and many people who voted in good faith and feel that we're just not taking that seriously.
Yeah, the final thing I'll say on that is there are a number of polls today asking people about their faith or lack of faith in the political process. And rather astonishingly, what came out of those polls was to a large extent, people want to see new political parties. And again, I've been doing this so long now that I suppose I've lost any belief that people will eventually see through the sham that is democracy. Talked earlier on about the monarchs of Europe and the financial controlling elites marrying into one another and creating democracy as an illusion so that people would acquiesce and that people could be convinced, cajoled into thinking that, right, we are in control of our own destinies. And, you know, it doesn't matter no matter what happens. We see this with Donald Trump in America, when, obviously, I can say quite clearly that not only myself on this programme, but my guests warned people about Donald Trump, even when he was campaigning. Bernie Sanders, didn't matter. The Clintons going way back. Jeremy Corbyn now, when he was campaigning to be leader of the Labour Party. And even people like David Icke were saying, this guy must be good, they're trying to shut him down, he must have something to say. And I was saying to Icke, no, he's got nothing to say at all that's new or original. And when he wins the leadership of the Labour Party, and when he becomes, if he does become Prime Minister, it will be apparent that nothing will change and that he too will acquiesce. We're seeing this with the anti-Semitism thing, which we'll talk about now in a minute. It's amazing to me that people don't say, well, how many... I mean, you remember George Bush screwing up the old adage about fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. How many times do people have to be led down the garden path by heroes that they fall for, that they embrace, that they worship, that they fall in love with, only to be, you know, left down utterly when it comes to the crunch? At what stage do people say, we've got to stand up here? You know, we can't change things because these people all work for the same masters. They are owned lock, stock. And that's, again, plagues me, that question. And I know it plagues you as well. And we're going to leave Brexit alone now. I hope it wasn't too dull for you today, but that's where it is. Indicative votes again tomorrow. MPs trying to see if there is a consensus. May might try and get the withdrawal agreement through. The UK will never leave the European Union. That's the end of it. So Mark Zuckerberg then, Facebook creator, or did he really create it, says that regulators and governments should play a more active role in controlling internet content. He published an op-ed in the Washington Post over the weekend, and he says the responsibility for monitoring harmful content is too great for firms like Facebook on their own. He wants law in four areas: harmful content, election integrity, privacy, and data portability. This comes after the shooting in Christchurch, New Zealand, 50 people killed by a gunman there. So in comes Zuckerberg saying, we need to be regulated. So Sky News reporter Sadia Chowdhury has been all over this, and this is her report on it, and it is very interesting.
Yeah, that's right. He's saying that big, important decisions about what we see on social media and how it's regulated shouldn't be left to companies like Google and Twitter entirely. They say they've done enough, but they need some help now from governments and regulators. And if you remember, a few months ago, we might have seen bus stop adverts saying things like data misuse is not our friend, fake accounts are not our friends. This was all seen as part of this push by the world's biggest social media company to sort of stave off criticism of how it operates. Mark Zuckerberg has written an op-ed in the Washington Post and has put it on his Facebook page as well, in which he says, lawmakers often tell me we have too much power over speech, and frankly, I agree. I've come to believe that we shouldn't make so many important decisions about speech on our own. He added, I believe we need a more active role for governments and regulators. By updating the rules for the internet, we can preserve what's best about it, the freedom for people to express themselves and for entrepreneurs to build new things, while also protecting society from broader harms. And Zuckerberg is saying that new regulation is needed in four key areas: harmful content, election integrity, privacy, and data portability. And of course, we know in the last few days, Facebook banned white nationalism and separatism from its platforms. It said that that came as a result of 3 months of research and discussions with civil rights groups. It's very keen not to be seen as reacting or in any way responsible for the terrorist attacks that we saw in New Zealand, which were, of course, live streamed on Facebook. But we don't know if that will be enough, because while we can create regulations at a local and a national level, Facebook, of course, remains a global platform.
Yeah, and this comes at the end of a week in which the UK's Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, said that he's going to bring a bill to Parliament that basically allows an overseer to compel Facebook or Twitter to delete anti-vaccine messages. Do you remember we covered this on the programme last week? Matt Hancock wants, when people are... Now, by the way, they made it clear that it's not just people posting articles that are critical of vaccines or that are questioning vaccine safety. It's not just that, which is bad enough. What Hancock wants to do is they want to use artificial intelligence to stop conversations on Facebook, for example, where two people might be talking about vaccines and one person might be saying, you've just had a child, haven't you there, Mary? Yeah, well, I would be very careful about vaccinating the child. I would have a look at the available information before I would do that, Mary. And what Matt Hancock is saying is he's saying that that conversation needs to be deleted. It needs to be stopped. I'm not making this up. If you don't believe me, Google this. Just go to the BBC News website. It's quite amazing, isn't it? That's what they want to do. And at the end of the week, then you have Zuckerberg saying, we're not able to stop harmful content. We're not able to stop... I mean, what is harmful content? Who could possibly define that? And we need help. We need government oversight. We need people to come in and say, this is acceptable and this is not acceptable, and so on, so on, so on. It is crazy. And back on... when I started doing this type of programme, because when I started out in the media, I was obviously very mainstream. It was very commercial. It was very newsy. And I certainly didn't entertain any of the things that I entertain now. But when I started doing this type of programme in 2009, nine years ago, even then I was talking about the danger of Facebook in terms of the size that it was inevitably going to become, the reach it was eventually going to have. And it would be kind of checkmate then. If you can get 1.5 billion people, which I think there are 1.5 billion Facebook users now. I think that's right, right? Don't quote me on that. But if you go and Google, again, there are other search engines. You don't have to use Google. But if you do have a look for it, it's about 1.5 billion. It was designed, the whole Zuckerberg story is a story I don't believe. Facebook was designed to get everybody in the same place. I've called it kettling. It's online kettling, baby. Baby, did I say baby? Basically, I meant to say baby. It's online kettling, baby, is what it is. Because when you get everybody in the one place, it's very easy to control what they see and what they don't see. Remember David Cameron at the United Nations a few years ago saying, we've got to stop outrageous conspiracy theories fermenting online about 9/11, he said, and stuff like that. So it's not just going to be about vaccines. It's going to be ultimately about everything. And that is basically game, set, and match to the establishment. And it's, I'm being told that Bing is a good search engine too. Use Bing. There's Yahoo as well. There's loads of them. Don't just use Google. And again, you see, again, the hegemony of Google being allowed to acquire YouTube, which it did, being the biggest and most widely used search engine in the world, deciding what people can see and what people can't see. We never have a conversation about that. You know, what a responsibility that is. You go and look for the ingredients for a certain type of cake on Google. And that's an enormous power for any organization to have, to decide what to tell you. You know, we don't have that conversation of Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Google deciding what you see and what you don't see. And when it comes to Matt Hancock saying that conversations about... I mean, we've had this with the BBC. We've had this with the BBC, who sent a directive around to all of its staff last year saying, when you're talking about climate change, you don't any longer need to bring in any balance on that. The issue has been decided. It's been decided. Climate change is real and it's going to kill us all. Therefore, don't worry about presenting a balance on your current affairs radio shows. We're getting it now with vaccines. Don't worry about a balance. There is no balance. There is no need for it. It has been decreed that vaccines are very, very important and they're very safe and we should all have them. We saw this on the on the Jeremy Vine show on BBC Radio 2 last week. I did a whole segment on that. It's on YouTube, where he had on this gormless goon from Dublin, this physicist who's not a doctor, who's not a virologist, not a biologist. No balance. But it's bad enough that they want to present no balance. Now they want to delete and obliterate from your field of vision anybody who dissents from the official line. So Zuckerberg, don't believe that story. The social, what was it called? The film with Jesse Eisenberg, don't believe a word of it. Facebook is obviously some deep state, some CIA, some Silicon Valley, some DARPA type invention. Get everybody into the one place, get them all there, and then very easy to prevent them seeing something which might be of real use for them. Hasn't a doctor successfully sued? Isn't there a successful libel case about the HPV vaccine in Japan? Isn't there? I think so. Favourable for vaccine safety activists. Look it up. It came across my desk over the weekend. It's a positive thing, you know. Let me say that again. Let me get that right. Somebody in Japan, a doctor who had been asking questions about the safety of the HPV vaccine, that woman was sued for libel. And those suing her, the establishment basically, lost. And the judge upheld in Japan her right to question the safety of the HPV vaccine because so many girls have gotten ill in Japan. Look this up. I've got a very haphazard way of telling you that story, but it's good. Therefore, that's why Matt Hancock wants to delete all mentions of vaccines as a bad thing on Facebook and on Twitter, because the HPV vaccine is obviously doing damage to some girls, and maybe a lot of girls, maybe. And they want to give it boys as well. I know I've jumped about five different issues there, but you get the picture. Facebook, 1.6 billion users, all in the one place. And lazy now, not got their own websites anymore. They're not going to various other platforms to get their news. They're getting it all on Facebook. How easy it is now to control them. Shall we leave that there? Let's leave that one there. This is Sunday View. And I planned on taking a tune. No time for tunes. I want to talk a little bit about anti-Semitism. I know this one comes up a lot, I know, but it's interesting today that the former mayor of London, Ken Livingstone, is in the Mail on Sunday today. Ken Livingstone strokes new Labour anti-Semitism row after dismissing problem as lies and smears peddled by ghastly Blairites. Livingstone has stoked the Labour Party's festering anti-Semitism row by dismissing it out of hand. He was suspended in 2016 for claiming that Hitler had supported Zionism. That's pretty nasty by the Mail on Sunday there, isn't it? What he was talking about back then was the Havre Agreement between the German government and Jewish Zionists in Germany. And what he said at the time was 100% historically accurate. Right? We remember this. So Livingstone was speaking at a meeting of Labour Against the Witch Hunt, and he said that he himself had fallen victim to a Labour machine run by Blairites, saying that lies and smears, what does he say? Jeremy Corbyn's office did not want the investigation to happen. It was about distracting. This is endemic. If you have a genuine socialist leader who is going to transform things for ordinary people and make the bloody corporations pay their fair share of tax, they will do whatever is necessary to stop him. So it's all lies and smears, says Livingstone, in order to bring down Jeremy Corbyn. The former mayor of London went on, it's not anti-Semitic to hate the Jews of Israel. And you can't have a proper functioning democracy in a world in which the media, whether it's the press or internet, can just spread lie after lie after lie. Hold that thought now about the media. Basically pushing this anti-Semitism agenda. It's not just the Zionist groups like Campaign Against Anti-Semitism and the Northwest Friends of Israel. They get a lot of blame for it, but unfairly, they're blamed for all of it. Let me tell you a little bit in a minute about how the media pushes this anti-Semitism garbage. Very little coverage of the thousands and thousands of Palestinians protesting in Gaza over the weekend to mark the anniversary of the start of the weekly protests, of course, last year. Demonstrators, according to the BBC, threw stones and burned tyres. Israeli troops killed a half a dozen Palestinians, apparently, over the weekend. I've gotten that information from other sources. Protesters dying in clashes with the Israeli Defence Forces. The protests are backing the declared right of Palestinian refugees to return to ancestral homes in what is now classified as Israel. We know now that the United Nations condemned the murder of 200 Palestinians between March and December last year. A UN inquiry says that the Israelis probably committed war crimes there, but there's nothing in the media about this. No investigation. Turn on the BBC, you never get a Palestinian on there. Why? Why do you not get Palestinian men and women speaking to the BBC? Newsnight spoke with last year Chippy Lisney. They spoke with Shimon Peres. Loads of people on Newsnight, but no Palestinians. Why? Why are there no Palestinians? Why does this story get three lines in the press? And you want to know why? And it's very controversial. People don't like talking about it. Because they know that if they do talk about it, that they'll be accused of anti-Semitism. You know? And that is the influence of Zionists in the UK media. And it never come. You'll never hear about it. You'll never hear about it anywhere. I know Gilad Atzmon has taken it on over the last few years. The extent that Jewish men and women are represented in very senior positions in UK broadcast media, but also in UK broadsheet media. Massively overrepresented. And I could name them. Nick Robinson, Laura Koonsberg, Robert Peston. Robinson, former political editor of the BBC, he was replaced by Laura Koonsberg. She's Jewish. Robinson was Jewish. Robinson went on to host the Today Show on Radio 4, which is massive. Koonsberg is now the BBC political editor. Who's ITV political editor? Well, it's Robert Peston. Robert Peston is Jewish. Who's head of programming at Channel 4 now? Ian Katz. Ian Katz is Jewish. Ian used to edit Newsnight. He's been replaced by a woman called, whose name escapes me. It'll come back to me. BBC ITV political editor is Jewish. Newsnight is now presented by three women. Two of them are Jewish. Emily Maitlis and Emma Barnett. Now, Emma Barnett's career is amazing. She's been expedited at the speed of light through the BBC. A very basic, very average presenter. Jewish woman. Very young Jewish woman. Right? Aronovich, Friedland, Daniel Finkelstein across The Guardian in The Times. Right? I mentioned Emma Barnett a second ago. Now presenting Newsnight with Emily Maitlis, Jewish women. It's extraordinary. Fast-tracked. Speed of light through the BBC. She went to the Habonim summer camps, which are Zionist youth camps. And Emma Barnett, who grew up in Manchester, who went to Zionist youth camps, is now a co-anchor on the BBC Newsnight programme. It's extraordinary. Look at former heads of departments at the BBC, Alan Yentob, Mark Damazar. I could be here all day. Nobody wants to say this stuff because you'll be accused of anti-Semitism. Jewish people make up 0.5% of the population of the UK, and Jews are not a race, by the way. They are not a biological race. They are an identity group, and they make up less than 1% of the population. But their presence in many of the key positions in the UK media is beyond disproportionate. Beyond disproportionate. Nobody wants to talk about it because you'll be accused of anti-Semitism. Oh, look at Alan attacking Emma Barnett. I'm not attacking Emma Barnett at all. I'm pointing out that a miserably poor presenter can be given a mid-morning programme on BBC Radio 5 Live and then expedited to Newsnight. Why is she miserably poor, Richie? You've got to qualify that. Well, last week she interviewed David Davis, the former Brexit secretary. And Davis explained in great detail how Theresa May's Brexit department was hijacked by civil servants like Ollie Robbins, who work hand in hand with the European Union to destroy the process of Brexit. And Davis explained this to Barnett twice, and Barnett kept asking him, so who's responsible? Who's responsible? She's useless. She was doing her nails at the time. But now she's presenting Newsnight. Why? Why does the former editor of Newsnight, a Jewish guy, go to be the head of programming at Channel 4? It's to prevent discussion around Jewish power, Zionist power in the UK. It's to prevent coverage of and analysis of the tyrannical apartheid state of Israel and its daily murder of the indigenous people. So don't blame Emma Barnett, don't blame Daniel Finkelstein and Aronovich and Emily Maitlis and Laura Kunzberg and Robert Peston. It's not their fault. Right? But there is an agenda there. Fill the BBC, Channel 4 and ITV with producers, with editors and with presenters whom are Jewish. No doubt. No doubt. 0.5% of the country's population are Jewish. 0.5%. And look at the percentage of Jewish presenters and editors across the three biggest broadcasters in the country. It's staggering. Nobody wants to talk about it. Well, they do. Do you know who wants to talk about it? Jews themselves. Because Manny Friedman wrote an article in the Times of Israel in 2012 where he said Jews do control the media. And it wasn't satirical. It wasn't a joke. He was bragging about it. And he talks in great detail about it. Go to gilad.co.uk because the article was later deleted by the Times of Israel. They don't want anybody to see it because he talked about the Jewish lobby in the United States and how successful it has been at planting Zionists at every level of the American media and the American print media and the film industry. Look at it. Manny Friedman. It's an amazing article. It's amazing. I've read it on the programme before. I haven't got time to read it now. And we're seeing it here in the UK. Nobody wants to talk about it. They're terrified of being called anti-Semitic, which is a misnomer. Jews are not Semites. Racist, which is a misnomer. Jews are not a biological race. And the likes of Emma Barnett and all these people, let me repeat it again, for the screaming snowflake Zionists, it's not their fault. It's not a Jewish conspiracy. It's an Israeli Zionist conspiracy. Look at Peter Oborn's programme, made for Channel 4 about the Jewish lobby. Staggering the amount, if you look at it. Just Google the names of the presenters on morning and mid-morning television through the week. And their producers, remember. And the editors and the programme controllers of those stations. And the names that keep coming up are Jewish folk. And yet, 0.5% of this country's population is made up of people who identify as Jewish. It's very interesting. That's it for Sunday's View. I had more to tell you, but I'm running out of time, so I'm going to leave you with a bit of Aretha Franklin and George Michael. And when you're telling people about that, ignore the taunts and the screams of anti-Semitism. There's nothing prejudicial about that report. It is a fact. Right? I'll see you tomorrow, Monday. Bye. Look after yourselves and one another. I've got some amazing guests tomorrow. Jake Morfonios is back on the programme. Peter Paul Parker. Lots of great stuff coming up in the week.